Nicole, the December 19th, 2019 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting to order. Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Here.
Mr. Tuohy?
Here.
I am here. Ms. Carroll?
Here.
Ms. Lowe?
Here.
Mr. McMahon?
I am present.
Mr. Stanton?
Also present.
We have nine. We have a quorum.
Thank you. It's been a while since we've had a full house. Welcome, everybody. Mr. Zenner, are there any adjustments or additions to the agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Thank you.
I move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Second.
Ooh. Ms. Russell, second on the agenda. You'll have another chance.
That's all right.
Mr. McMahon. Everyone should have gotten a copy of the December 5th meeting minutes. Any changes or edits to those minutes? Seeing none.
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Russell. Second by Mr. Stanton. Thumbs up approval of the meeting minutes. Unanimous, except for one abstention from Mr. Tuohy.
I wasn't here. I wasn't either.
Oh, two abstentions. Sorry, Mr. Strodman. Moving on to our cases. The first section for the evening is subdivision. Our first case is case 14-2020, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of Christian Fellowship Church for a 34-lot preliminary plat of their 35-acre property located at the northeast corner of Chapel Hill Road and Louisville Drive. Upon revision of the proposed preliminary plat, the advertised design adjustments are no longer necessary. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chairman. As you stated, this is a request, more particularly for a revised preliminary plat, and I will touch on the removed design adjustment requests here in 1 second, but real fast, just to reiterate, this is a preliminary plat for approximately 35-acre site. Due to the advertisings that were associated with the previously identified design adjustments, it was advertised as a public hearing. Therefore, a public information meeting was conducted. Postcards were sent for that, and also letters to the property owners were sent and advertised in the Tribune. So once the design adjustments were identified, the applicant did revise the site and the layout of the site to remove the need for the design adjustments. Specifically, the two terminal streets that are shown on the plan were reduced in length to make them compliant so that they are less than 750 feet in length. And the two lots, the two atypical lots on there that identified in the staff report, lots 127 and 128, were reconfigured so that now they are considered standard lots. Before, they were identified as tier lots, which are not permitted on property that has been previously subdivided. So just a quick history on this. It is currently two lots. It was previously approved for a preliminary plat. It was final platted. With the requested revision to the site plan, because of the increase in number of lots and the extension of infrastructure, they're required to revise the original preliminary. So we're going through a revised preliminary plat. The next step at this would be to have the final plat adopted at council to actually create the new residential lots. This is a aerial of the site with Chapel Hill Road along the south and Louisville Drive along the west edge of the property. As you can see, generally undeveloped at this time. The site plan or the preliminary plat on the left, as you can see, this is, again, a replatting two existing lots. So they'll have a total of 35 lots. I think I misquoted the number of lots in the title there. So it's 35 total lots. 32 of those are single-family style lots, two common lots for infrastructure and other requirements, and then one lot, the larger lot, is going to be retained by the Christian Fellowship Church in the southwest corner of the site for a new church for that facility. Again, we discussed the design adjustments. Particular things with this preliminary is the new dedication of right-of-way with the construction of new streets on the site. A couple other features of the site is the lake in the middle, which will accommodate stormwater. There's also a trail that's being shown through the site that will connect the two terminal streets as well, which we identified as an important feature there. If you'll notice, too, the terminal streets, and I touched on this in the staff report a little bit, was they do not connect. Ideally, if this site was brand new, they would have some stubs to the neighboring properties, although all those sites are currently developed, so there's not opportunities there for connectivity. Speaking with the applicants, there is a drainage way that goes down through generally where the lake is that kind of bisects the two terminal street ends, which do provide an environmental hurdle there in the middle, which in speaking with them, we did agree that avoiding that would be a benefit in terms of not disturbing environmental areas. They propose the two terminal streets. Part of that, though, is the design of the street of the site with the lake in the middle. The portion that would be left that could connect does include some areas with some steeper slopes and with some environmentally sensitive areas. So we thought it was an appropriate design. This is just kind of a side-by-side of the far right there is kind of the elevation model, so you can kind of see the area that we're talking about. I'm going to highlight the area in the very northeast corner, which is identified in the report as kind of the atypical lots. As you can see, it lies on the other side, really, of that drainage area / creek. And that is intended to be developed, although to a lower scale than what might otherwise be. We're going to jump ahead to this. So this is, again, the two TET lots I was speaking of. So instead of having the lots basically directly, the bulk of the lot abutting the cul-de-sac, they are proposing to extend a private driveway with shared access easement over it that would meet fire department standards due to the length to access basically those two lots. The lots are standard. They're just slightly atypical as far as design, but they don't require any design adjustments. I just wanted to point that out as kind of a unique feature to this one. And again, this is just a couple pictures of the site. Kind of looking down on the left would be where the cul-de-sac off Louisville Drive would go down, and to the right, to the top right corner is more where the lake would be. And that's kind of the direction the arrows there is kind of the viewpoint for that site, just to give you a little context of what the site looks like today. Overall, though, staff is recommending approval of the preliminary plat for the Chapel Hill Meadows plat, too. So, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions for staff?
It talked about preservation.
Ms. Rushing. Before we move on to staff questions, I would like to ask commissioners if they've had any expertise on this case to please share that with us so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of the case in front of us. Seeing none, Ms. Rushing.
It talked about preservation of some of the trees. Do you know which trees are going to survive?
The applicant did submit a land analysis map, and I apologize not having that in front of me here, that identified the proposed areas for the tree preservation areas, and maybe Mr. Crockett or Mr. Stevens can speak to that when they get up here. Probably have a better idea of where exactly that's located, but generally it's in the common lot areas.
I was assuming it'd be up in that corner where you showed us the two new lots, or the two lots. So I won't do that.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Smith, talk to me about this fire department stub goes in the northeast. Fire department's totally cool, that private dive, split use type access thing?
excuse me. So there... their interest in it is to make sure that they have a fire department approved access drive that meets their requirements so that if there is an emergency call, they can navigate down the roadway, they have enough width to deploy, and they can turn around. So as far as that goes, they have reviewed it and is acceptable.
Okay, just points of information, I guess, mostly for me. So that would mean there would be no private parking on that street.
It generally is going to serve just like a private driveway. And the difference here is that because it is so long, they do have to meet that requirement. I think it's in excess of 150 feet. They have to have those certain specs on their driveway. We wouldn't even necessarily need it on the preliminary, but we felt it was a good illustrative tool to make sure that it was clear what would be required to develop those two lots.
All right. I don't want to get in the arcana. That's my question for the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any additional questions of staff? Seeing none, we will open up the floor for public comment on this case. If you have any public comments, please come forward to the microphone. Please give your name and address for the record. You will have 3 minutes to speak. If you're representing a group, you'll have 6 minutes to speak.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, offices at 1000 West Nifong. Again, as Mr. Smith indicated, this is a revised preliminary plat on the original plat that's in this area. It is a final plat into two original lots. Again, we are platting two stub streets or two cul-de-sac streets coming off of the existing streets that are in the location. To answer your question, Ms. Rushing, with regards to the significant trees, there are a large number of significant trees, what the city classifies as significant trees, which are 20 inches and larger. A lot of those trees are located on the common lots, common lot C2 and C1, along the north property line, as well as just to the east or the downstream side of the lake in that location. And so that is one of the reasons why we are seeking to not connect the two streets together, because going through that location would require a substantial amount of grading further down from the lake itself, thus causing the removal of a lot of those trees. And so by this configuration allows us to preserve a lot of the larger trees that are on the property and put them in common space. With regards to your question, Mr. McMahon, with regard to the fire access, that fire access is shown meets the Appendix D in the fire code. And so we do work directly with the fire chief and the fire marshal to make sure that is in conformance with those codes. And again, we are looking at single family residential for the majority of the site. For the peripheral of the site. Those lots are in substantial size and completion of what's adjacent to this property. So we're not looking to differ very much from what's already there in other neighborhoods that's in and around this location. The large lot that is currently being platted is for a church. For the Christian Fellowship, the new location of their church building. If you've driven to the site, you'll notice that there is construction taking place. It's not construction for this residential neighborhood, but rather the church itself. So whether the preliminary plat moves forward or not, we're still in compliance with the platting regulations and the building regulations, so the church property can proceed. So I don't want any misconception that we're jumping the gun or moving ahead with the construction of this ahead of time, because we're certainly not. What's taking place is the construction of the church facility itself, and so that lies at the closer to the intersection itself. There will be some future expansions on that property if things go well, and so we've kind of allocated and planned for that. But again, this is for the residential portion. When the church purchased this properties quite a few years ago, they had this in mind. They had the idea that they wanted to come in here and build some residential units in and around their church building. They want their congregation to have the first right to come in here and live close to the church. And what's not sold to the congregation themselves, they will be on the open market. So I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission may have. I do have Mike Acock, who represents Christian Fellowship, with me tonight, as well as Rob Wolverton, who's a development consultant.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Are there any questions for the speaker? I see none. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any additional speakers that would like to speak on this case tonight? Seeing none, we will close the public comment period. Commission discussion. Ms. Russell.
Well, since there's no discussion, I'm going to move regarding case 14-2020 to approve the preliminary plat for Chapel Hill Meadows, plat 2.
Second.
Second by Mr. Stanton. We have a motion on the floor. Is there any discussion on this motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
9-0, motion carries.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That concludes our subdivisions for the evening. We'll move on to public hearings. Our first case for the evening under public hearings is case 21-2020, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of Show Me Central Habitat for Humanity to rezone two lots from RMF, multifamily dwelling district, to MC, mixed-use corridor district. The subject 0.55-acre properties are located at the southwest corner of Lakeview Avenue and Poplar Street, and the existing home on the northern parcel is addressed 1311 Poplar Street. May we have a report, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. So this is a zoning map amendment case, otherwise commonly known as a rezoning. As you mentioned, it's the southwest corner of Lakeview Avenue and Poplar Street. We'll talk about this a little bit more in a moment, but this is the city's Grissom building here directly to the north. The two subject parcels together are about half an acre. The request this evening is to go from multifamily zoning to MC or mixed-use corridor zoning. At a public information meeting on November 26th. We also put an advertisement in the Tribune for this public hearing tonight. We sent 10 letters and 10 postcards respectfully to adjacent property owners. So here is the Columbia Public Works Grissom building. It's our fleet management. This would typically be seen as a high MC or an IG or industrial use here. We've got the city's municipal power plant here, the Business Loop corridor here, and then this is the Habitat for Humanity's new ReStore right here, and they are the property owner. When looking at this area in terms of the surrounding land use context, and then also what the Columbia Imagine Future land use map says, we've got a lot of information that does tend to support more of a commercial nature in this area. It didn't zoom out too far here, but the property along the Business Loop corridor on the north side, generally within 400 to 500 feet, is predominantly zoned MC or IG for about 2 mile stretch going from Paris Road over here all the way to West Boulevard on the west. So we do see quite a bit of this mixed-use commercial zoning already within the area. There is a little bit of a disconnect between the existing zoning of some of this property. So as I mentioned, that this would probably be more of an IG use right here, but municipal operations are allowed in any zone, whether it be R1, R2, or this RMF. And so that's why you do kind of see that disconnect, because this is city-owned property here where the zoning does not actually match the use. There is an intact primarily single-family neighborhood right here that is also zoned on that RMF, a little bit of RMF right here. This is a large acreage parcel over here, also zoned RMF. But the rest of it here on this map, this red is that MC, the gray is the IG for this area. So at this time, Habitat has not submitted specific development plans for an expansion, but should the zoning be approved, it would allow potentially an expansion of their existing store or similar like activities on this site. We do anticipate that perhaps a planning action may also need to come before any redevelopment. So taking into account, let me go back here and talk a little bit more about Columbia Imagined. It does have neighborhood district designation in the Columbia Imagined Future Land Use Map. It's kind of on the line, so this red area in here is all commercial. When we look at the neighborhood district future land use category, we typically tend as a staff, as you know, to recommend MN zoning. But we also are able to take into account the larger land use mix and other planning considerations. And in times like this, we do think it might be appropriate to consider MC zoning as well within the neighborhood district. The neighborhood district envisions a variety of land uses, which does include a mixture of commercial, office, and residential. And so looking at the preponderance of this area in terms of use and zoning, we do think it's okay to go to MC rather than MN in this particular location. So looking at all of that information for this site, and also kind of taking into account, you know, the vision for the business loop that's been envisioned by the business loop CID in their corridor plan, even though it's not directly within this property, or this property does not fall directly within their planning boundary. And we do see a lot of movement towards having more industrial and commercial and kind of artisan cottage and cottage types of uses. So because of that, we are recommending approval of the zoning map amendment to MC for this site.
Thank you. I was. Such a report. Before we move on to staff questions, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any expertise on this case to please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of the case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
I don't necessarily have an issue with this unless our neighbors or the neighbors there have expressed any concerns on that. The closest true residential is to the northwest. You sent out your notices, Ms. Bacon. Any response, negative, positive, anything at all?
I didn't get anything. There is still one residential
property
directly across the street that does appear to be habitated at this time. House is either vacant or it doesn't look so great, and this property has been vacant for at least 30 years.
I'm never sure if that house actually anyone
yeah.
or not. But we received no neighborhood pushback. No, okay.
We did not.
And the area, surrounding area, if you guys are unfamiliar with this, is offices, businesses, that type of thing. All right, thank you very much.
Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open up the floor to public comment. Again, if you can please give us your name and address for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. I'll keep my comments fairly brief. I think Ms. Bacon did an excellent job in her staff report describing this piece of property. More importantly, basically the industrial use to the north, and I think that was one thing I really wanted to kind of to hit on. I think she did a great job illustrating that the Grissom building and the fleet operations of the city is the neighbor to the north, so there's a lot of industrial type uses in this area already. The reason why we're asking for MC and not MN is that when the Restore does expand in the future, and we don't necessarily have immediate plans for that, but when it does in the future, we want to have light type zoning for the existing piece of property as well as this property as well. So we don't want to have a mixed use on the two if we do an expansion, and that's the main reason for that. Habitat has recently purchased these two properties. They're excited to be in this area. If you've been to the previous Restore location, it was very crowded, hard to get to, and this allows them a much better situation to serve the community. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the Commission may have.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Are there any questions for the speaker?
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional speakers on this case? I see none, so we will close public comment. Commissioner discussion. Mr. McMahon.
If there is no discussion in the matter of case 21-2020, Crockett Engineering representing Show Me Central, Habitat for Humanity, rezoning from RMF to MC, I move to approve.
Move to second.
Second by Mr. Strodman. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Tui.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll.
Yes.
Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Stanton.
Yes.
9-0, motion carries.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. This brings us to our third and last case of the evening, case 22-2020, a request by Jonalyn Seamer for a conditional use permit to allow for an accessory dwelling unit on a property zoned R1 and addressed 103 Anderson Avenue. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes. This is the Third CUP request that this board has considered. It is the very first for an accessory dwelling unit in the R1 zone. The location is 103 Anderson Avenue. It's about a 10,000 square foot lot. If approved, the conditional use permit will allow for an accessory dwelling unit. Ms. Seamer has indicated she would like a small structure in her backyard in the R1 zone. We sent 31 postcards and respective letters to advertise a public information meeting on November 26th. And then on December 3rd, there was a notice in the paper for tonight's public hearing. So I've highlighted 103 Anderson here on the map here. You can see that it is one of few R1 properties on this block. She's just north of Broadway and just south of Ash. There's a sprinkling throughout the neighborhood of mostly R2, but some R1. We've got a historic preservation overlay property, the Tucker House here, and then there's a little bit of floodplain as well throughout the neighborhood. But for the most part, this area north of Broadway was historically rezoned to R2, and we've been dealing with the outcome of that, I think, through several planning cases throughout recent years and recent memory. Specifically, Ms. Seamer was part of one of two downzoning requests throughout this neighborhood. This came out of the 2015 West Central Neighborhood Action Plan, which really highlighted downzoning as a way to promote neighborhood stability. Most of the houses within this West Area neighborhood are, you know, single-family homes, but they are on that R2 lot. And so we've seen, you know, over time there's been some lot consolidation, some rezoning requests, et cetera, and there's been some duplex and multifamily development that has not always been well received by the neighborhood in terms of aesthetics or also some infrastructure related concerns. For instance, sewage backup and basements is a common complaint that we hear in this neighborhood. Through all of these conversations that we've had through the development of the West Central Neighborhood Action Plan and then those two recent downzoning requests, which I believe most of you were here for, this has really come to be clear to the staff that this is a very active neighborhood. They come together, they work together to plan for their neighborhood. During the West Central Neighborhood Action Plan, one of the prime things we heard was we do want to stabilize our neighborhood, but we are not closed to new people coming in. So having opportunities to have families or mixed income or different types of people who want to live in the neighborhood was welcomed, but that they wanted to have context-sensitive density and then to really avoid some of that, you know, duplex redevelopment that would take out, you know, existing smaller footprint single-family homes. So related to that, I think that a lot of the neighbors did realize that by going to R1 that they would lose the right to have an ADU by right per our current UDC. Now, there were some code amendments to allow ADUs prior to the UDC, and then with the UDC, it opened up the opportunity to have ADUs in the R1. Previously, it was no ADU in the R1 at all. Post-UDC, because of these conversations with the neighbors through the neighborhood planning process and before that, the opportunity to have ADUs in R1 zoning was allowed by CUP. So that was a big part of the conversation. But the West Central Neighborhood Plan also specifically talked about potentially coming up with an overlay as a tool to allow those downzoned R1 properties then to be able to be permitted an ADU by right. Staff sees some pros and cons to doing a blanket overlay for a large area versus doing the site-specific CUP analysis that we're doing this evening. They're different tools. They have pros and cons for both of them, but because there isn't an overlay option for, I think it was called like 1.5 density as we were going through the planning process. We do have the CUP process that we're going through this evening, and that will allow that same relief for property owners who do want to ask for a second dwelling unit. And for the folks at home, when I talk about ADUs, a lot of times they're called granny flats, but the idea is that it's an accessory structure that is secondary to the primary structure. So it can be either in the basement, it can be, you know, on a garage in the backyard, it can even be a part of the main structure, but it typically is going to be its own separate unit. It's going to comply to fire code requirements. It'll have a separate entrance. There'll be a separate utility bill usually. And in our code, in Chapter 29.33GG, we have what we call use-specific standards for these dwelling units. It describes how big they can be, how tall they can be, how much parking is required, and where they can be relative to the main home, and then the setbacks on a lot, so where they can be. So in this case, for Ms. Seamer's plan to put about a 450-square-foot unit in the back, there are rules on how close it can be to her neighboring properties, to protect her neighbors, how close it can be to her property to provide privacy for both her and the potential unit, and then some practical things related to fire code on how far it can be back on the lot. So this lot is 200 by 50 feet, which is pretty common for this neighborhood, and also I think why a lot of these neighbors did want to have ADU opportunity in this neighborhood. They've got long, deep lots. There's plenty of room, if the secondary dwelling unit is pretty small, that you can have enough room for everybody to coexist in a peaceful way. The idea, too, is that it offers some flexibility and some affordability, so folks who build the ADU may have an income stream coming in, or it may be, an aging parent that you want to take care of, or your parent is taking care of your children, or the homeowner may even want to downsize, move into the smaller unit, rent out the main unit. So there's a lot of different economic models and then just sort of functional models we see with this sort of housing here and then in other places throughout the country. Specifically this one would be, she estimates about 450 square feet, one bed, one bath. But per the code, it would be permitted to go up to 800 square feet. So when I mentioned that they're relative to the primary structure, ADUs can be no larger than 800 square feet or 75% of the main structure, whichever is larger. So in this instance, her house is about 1,100 square feet. So 800 is the magic number, is the max that this size could be, given that all other lot requirements are met. And this would be a conforming lot in terms of the size of it, both the width and the gross square footage of the lot to meet. I'm not going to go through all of the six criteria unless you would like me to. In terms of how we analyze a conditional use permit, for us, the biggest thing in terms of this request was B, the proposed conditional use is consistent with the city's adoptive comprehensive plan. And so earlier at the work session and in prior meetings, we've talked quite a bit about how neighborhood planning has been a direct result of our comprehensive plan and how it really allows for those much more detailed analysis, land use decisions that can be made by a neighborhood for a neighborhood. And in this instance, this neighborhood has been very active. They had the first adopted neighborhood plan to come out of the Columbia Imagined process. And for those folks out there, we are open to helping you do a neighborhood plan for your neighborhood. That's certainly an option. But it makes this fine level decision making easier for the staff and I think also the commission and the council, because we do have really specific guidance on these types of issues. So specifically to read from this neighborhood plan, the first land use and zoning priority for this area, the West Central area, is to downzone land to preserve single family character, support downzoning of single family character areas to R1, and apply an overlay district to accommodate continuing eligibility of ADUs, accessory dwelling units within the area, as a means of supporting first-time homeowners and retirees. So really we have a lot of information that this is what this neighborhood wants in terms of this sort of land use decision-making process. We think that it meets the other five criteria per 29.64. Ms. Seamer will be required to follow all city codes in terms of the fire department codes as well as those use-specific standards for the use. We think that it is a great fit for the neighborhood plan and then thus Columbia Imagined goals for livable, sustainable neighborhoods via context-sensitive density and neighborhood planning. So tonight we are requesting approval of the CUP. And I am happy to answer any questions, and I believe Ms. Seamer would also be able to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Bacon. Before we move to commissioner questions, I would like to ask any commissioners who have had any ex parte to please disclose that now, so all commissioners have the same information on this case before them. Seeing none, are there any questions for Ms. Bacon? Mr. McMahon.
Just an admin question. Are we going to discuss the potentiality or details of an ADU overlay for the west side in work session sometime? Are you guys just an idea you guys are batting around?
I think we had batted it around, and I believe, as Ms. Bacon pointed out, in our discussions internally, there are some significant downsides associated to a general overlay and developing. We had talked about an overlay can consist of a floating zone as well, meaning that it would, when particular conditions exist, the zone requirements would attach to particular property. And so there's the idea of an overlay floating zone, and then the CUP potentially has been discussed. The CUP allows for the greatest amount of neighborhood interaction to ensure that all neighbors are informed and something just doesn't get built without the interaction of those surrounding neighbors, to ensure that the context sensitivity is expressed in the plans there. So to answer the question, given what we have discussed internally and what we see as the potential downside to an overlay, even though it's expressed within the plan, it's not an active project that's currently on our radar. We feel that the CUP process works effectively and is probably a more appropriate route at this point, unless so directed through either the commission or a request of council. We'll probably continue to pursue this as the method by which to approve ADUs moving forward.
All right. I just have a quick follow-up. I agree with everything you just said and why you made the choice you made. I would just ask that if you guys do bat that around again, if it becomes a thing, I think we need to.
You definitely would. We'd have to. It would require the establishment of overlay zones, not unlike our urban conservation districts, would require initiation. Typically, those would either come from the neighborhood itself through a percentage of its ownership. It could be initiated by city council or through the procedures that exist within the UDC. It is possible that the Planning and Zoning Commission potentially could make recommendation to council to initiate as well. So we will, I think, as a part of moving forward with maybe our comprehensive planning efforts, talk about this as well as some other zoning tools that we may need to begin to look at. I know missing middle construction and things of that nature, which we have touched on before in work session, are things that we probably need to start to look at as it relates to our zoning strategies in order to address a housing typology that we currently do not have within the city that's easily attainable. So that this, I think, will flow into a much broader discussion of how do we accommodate the unique demands that are being created by the ever-changing demographic that we are dealing with.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Thank you. I apologize, Ms. Seymour. I didn't mean to hijack any of your time there. Just some admin stuff for us going forward. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open up the floor for public comments. If you have any comments you would like to make, you can come up to the podium. We need your name and address for the record. You don't have to make any comments, but if there's anything you'd like to just share that can help us make a decision.
My name's Jonalyn Seymour. I'm at 103 Anderson. I'd like to build a small cottage in the back. I think it will be really consistent with the neighborhood style. And I know that we're anticipating increased density. This seems like a great way to do it. I don't know if you have any other questions or information that you want from me.
That sounds fine. Are there any questions for Ms. Seymour?
A question?
Ms. Carroll.
If you don't mind, can you comment on the intended use? Will this be a rental or for your own personal use?
Yeah, sure. No, my original plan was that it is a smaller place, so I thought I might put a graduate student there, rent it out to someone that would be quiet and studious, kind of augment my eventual retirement funds. Yeah, that's kind of the thought. I don't know, someday when I'm a lot older, maybe I would go live there. It doesn't have any stairs, you know.
That sounds lovely.
Thank you. I'm excited about it, you know, if it comes to be.
Any additional questions? I see none at this time. Thank you.
Dee Dockin, 804 Agin Street. And I was so excited to see this in the newspaper. I didn't know she was planning to build this, but this is exactly what our neighborhood needs, I think, more of to increase density in a really, in a pleasing way for us. And I was going to say, well, maybe we should do this overlay thing, because I don't like, I know she felt like she had a this is a barrier to the people, but I didn't realize there were downsides. So anyway, I'd like to discuss it more, and maybe I would put some energy into it from the neighborhood, getting it started if it seemed like a good idea.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Dockin? I see none. Thank you. Any additional speakers? Seeing none, we'll close public comments. Commissioner discussion. Mr. Toohey.
So I have an issue with this. I don't think this is the way to increase density, and I think this sets a bad precedent. I think if you want to increase density, this needs to go back to R2 and upzone back to R2, not through a CP or a CUP.
Do you mind elaborating on that?
I just think that's what the zoning classification should be for what she's intending to do with the property. That's what it was before. And so I think that's it ought to go back to R2. We have a spot zoning situation with what it is now when you look at the surrounding properties. So we eliminate that spot zoning issue if it goes back to R2 and she still can have the same use she wants to use. It's also part of the CAP plan where we want to try to increase density through zoning.
Ms. Carroll.
This is increasing density through zoning. The additional dwelling units are an allowed use, a additional use in R1. I think that this type of R1 with an additional dwelling unit achieves the goals that are outlined in the West Area Plan, the goals that are outlined for Columbia Imagined in terms of increasing density. I support this type of additional dwelling unit in R1, where it's an incremental step in increasing density. That's typically a little bit more manageable for the community. I have no arguments here. I think that it achieves our goals.
Mr. Stanton.
I agree with my fellow commissioner. This was number one, West Central Neighborhood Plan kind of spearheaded this whole ADU thing anyway. And this helps the little guy, the guy that owns one house and wants to expand the use of its, of his little piece of paradise, and work really hard on working on these ADU codes anyway. So yeah, I'm glad to see it. This is coming to fruition and being applied. So yeah, I plan to support it.
Mr. Toohey.
So I don't have I think it's great that we're seeing another one of these. I think hopefully we have more. But I just think it should be go back to A2, which is, I think, is more fitting.
Mr. McMahon.
Well, that may be easier for certain elements in the community to have an R2. It'll be easier for a process if it was R2. This homeowner chose to downzone and then chose to have an ADU. Well, that was a barrier for her. That was her barrier, her path to follow. And as Commissioner Stanton just said, this has been, and we've seen this, we've been involved in this, you know, directly and indirectly. This has been a neighborhood-driven process from the bottom up, whereas when this neighborhood was designated R2, that was a top-down process. And this is the type of community engagement and type of community, I would say, that we would like to see. Yes, it is more difficult to make that R1, R2 transition. It is spot zoning. We currently, as a nation, don't have a good solution to that. And I'm quite pleased that West Ash and West Central neighborhood has chosen to engage and chosen to jump through the hurdles. And I wish them more success in the future.
Ms. Carroll.
Off of what Michael and Brian have just been discussing, I see the friction that Brian is referring to, the down zone and then the additional dwelling unit. But I think both of those actions and those actions together support two goals within the plan. And thus I support both down zoning requests and ADU requests. In fact, I would like to see less friction for ADUs in R1 if people would like to pursue that.
Ms. Rushing?
And this lot just seems particularly well suited for placement of an ADU. I mean, some lots might not be as well suited, but this one, I think it would look really nice, could look really, really nice on the back part of that lot.
Ms. Burns?
I think I saw that 31 postcards went out on this, and there were no responses, no negative responses, no one here to speak against it. So I'm planning on supporting this.
Mr. McMahon?
I don't mean to cut off a good conversation. Not one that we've had this before. Unless you guys want to go on, I have a motion. I mean, do you guys want to? All right. In the matter of case 22-2020, a request by Jocelyn Seamer for a conditional use permit to allow for accessory dwelling unit on her property, currently zoned R1. I move to approve.
Second.
Second by Ms. Rushing. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I'd like to say that when the request came forward to downzone these properties, I understood the arguments and did support it, but we are working also for opportunities to increase housing and at looking for opportunities to infill. And Mr. Toohey's comments do strike a chord with that, and the request ran a bit contrary to some of those arguments. Still, like I said, I did support it. I do understand that the quality of these neighborhoods and the history of those zoning decisions in those neighborhoods. I find this request very ironic, given the whole history of the ADU and that it was created with this neighborhood in mind and with these substandard, I think we called them originally, the substandard R2s, in that they couldn't take advantage of the original minimum requirements for doing a two-family dwelling unit, which is how we sort of started shaping the ADU requirements. It was to allow these small R2s to take some advantage of their zoning. So for this lot to go from an R2 that couldn't be a full-fledged R2 to be an R2 that could be an ADU R2 to go to an R1 and now come back as a CUP wanting the ADU is a very interesting journey. But I don't agree with Mr. Tuohy that being an R1 with a CUP with an ADU is the same as being an R2. I mean, I believe that you requested to be downzoned from an R2 to an R1 because there's certain developments allowed in an R2 that you would prefer not to have on your property, and that you are specifically asking for this conditional use permit because there's a specific use you do want attached to this property. That. Any additional comments? Seeing none, Ms. Burns, roll call, please.
Yes. Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
No.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
8-1 motion carries.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That concludes our cases for the evening. Are there any public comments? Seeing none, any staff comments?
No, I can't hold back.
Especially our last meeting of the year, Mr.
And we've only been meeting for an hour and 4 minutes, so let me filibuster. You do have a meeting.
Don't do that.
I don't want to be impeached. So, okay. Your next meeting will be January 9th. We will meet at the same bat time and the same bat place, but you will not have the same great food. We do have a work session that will start at 5:30 with your regular meeting at 7, and it is a doozy of a meeting, so we will not feed you high carbs. You do have that many items on your agenda. This is probably in the last 2 years the most we have had at a first meeting in January. 08-2020, which is the Moon Valley plat I was informed of earlier today, is still not ready to go, so you will only have one subdivision, and this is a revised preliminary plat down at Discovery Park. It is tied with the first public hearing, 24-2020, which is a PD plan for the extension of Endeavor Drive, and then we are addressing with the revised preliminary plat some realignments of Nakona Boulevard or Nakona Parkway that have occurred since its original construction. We have a rezoning for 1001 South Providence. This is the AQ Beauty Supply building that is immediately south of the coffee shop, directly across from Hickman High School. This is a PD right now seeking MN zoning. 34-2020 and 37-2020, when you see the map, do a double take. They are two separate properties. One is in the county, which is 34-2020. That is a permanent request for zoning. And then 37-2020 is immediately to the north of it on I-70 Drive Southeast, and it is currently an unaddressed and unapproved property seeking to be rezoned the same zoning classification as the parcel behind it, both owned by Ms. Cully. 38-2020 is a major plan amendment for a parcel at Discovery as well. This is the former location of Center Point Hospital that is immediately south of the roundabout, the second roundabout within the project site, and it is proposed to amend the PD for the purposes of an office building and a second hotel in the location. And then your final case for the evening will be 39-2020, which is a rezoning request being presented on behalf of the Columbia Housing Authority to rezone its current administrative office building from PD and a parcel behind it that has frontage along South Providence from PD to MOF. So the current parcel on Providence is actually zoned RMF, if I recall correctly, and they are desiring to do a separate detached meeting space that will replace the conference room that is currently in their administrative building. Since their operations side has grown, they need to use the office conference room space currently, and they want to build a separate meeting space that can not only be used for the administrative offices, but potentially also as a community center for those that are within the housing complex at that particular location. just so we can get your teeth and your tongue tantalized with where these properties are. The Moon Valley project, as I said, this is down off of Moon Valley, but we are not ready to move that yet. The Discovery Park project, this is the preliminary plat area. This incorporates some existing development that already is in place, as well as the existing road right-of-way for Nakona Parkway, and then the extension of Endeavor, which comes out of the signalized intersection just to the west of the overpass. Your Discovery Park project, this is a two-lot plan district plan that will then come in as a final plat, I believe, in the following month. Immediately to your right, then, is the AQ Beauty Supply property at 1001 North Providence, and the undeveloped parcel immediately to the north of that is now where the coffee shop is built and apparently is open. As I said, don't take a double take. These are two separate maps, one parcel in front of the other, and both of these are the permanent zoning on the left and then the rezoning of the city parcel on the right. And these are both owned by Ms. Cully and seeking MN zoning or MC zoning from their current RS and R1 respectively. And then our final two projects, again, the major amendment, and I apologize, the project I foreshadowed for you was the wrong project. The hotel comes next month. This is actually a multifamily development. We have way too many things going on. This is an existing multifamily development that is being proposed to go through a major alteration. The roadway that you see on the southern portion of the highlighted area is actually on the northern boundary of the PD plan that is also part of this meeting, which is 24-2020. That roadway will serve as an access to the commercial property, which comes off of the extension of Endeavor. So Endeavor will come up and frame, in essence, this parcel here. This particular private driveway will actually serve as a backdoor access to the future commercial site, and you'll see that on the PD plan. And then, of course, the rezoning for the Columbia Housing Authority. The current administrative offices are under an existing PD, which basically restrict the use of this particular parcel to just the administrative building for the Housing Authority. This particular parcel back here is zoned RMF. They are looking to rezone both parcels consistently to an MOF zoning classification to allow for the construction, as I said, of a freestanding conference room space on the undeveloped lot to the northeast. With that, those are our items for the January 9th Planning and Zoning Commission meeting at 7 p.m. As we talked about today in work session, we'll be back on dealing with comprehensive plan items at your January 9th meeting. And then that'll either include a presentation and discussion of our urban service area with Dave Sorrell, with our assistant utilities director, talking about our integrated resource plan, sewer capacity and availability. We will either do that on the 9th or we will do that on the 23rd's meeting, and it is dependent upon Mr. Sorrell's availability. But those are your items that we will cover in the month of January for the comp plan. And then as we discussed this evening, so the public is also aware of that, we have been informed and authorized to proceed forward with a West Area Plan, a joint planning effort between the city's planning commission and the county's planning commission. We will have a meet and greet and organizational meeting of the two commissions at the beginning of February of 2020 at our February 5-6 meeting. So we will have that prepared for you, and that will be just a work session as it relates to process and schedule and outcomes. So with that, we wish you a Merry Christmas. We thank you for your service, and have a enjoyable time off, and we'll see you at the beginning of January.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Commissioner comments. Mr. Tuohy.
So I think we need to pick a date and actually sit down and talk about the CAP plan and how we're going to use that plan going forward, especially with the West Area Plan coming up. I think that's really important to include in how we move forward with those plans.
We will see if what Ms. Buffalo's availability is in order to discuss that, or a representative or staff. and see if we can't schedule that into the meeting in January, one of the meetings in January that we do not have Mr. Sorrell speaking at. If that is acceptable by the commission, that is what we'll do. If you have not availed yourself of that plan, we would ask then that the commissioners avail yourself of it. It is available online. As Ms. Bacon has pointed out during our work sessions, we do have particular friction points between the CAPS goals and objectives and those that are articulated more broadly within the city's comprehensive plan. So we will potentially have to address those as a part of this discussion. I believe we have also discussed previously within work session how city staff views the supplemental plans that have been created. We are in a position that the comprehensive plan is the overall guiding document for city land use decisions. The other supporting plans that get crafted are grafted into the comprehensive plan, but not necessarily taking precedent over the broader goals and objectives that were adopted for the community as a whole. And I think to Mr. Toohey's point, we need to reckon how those two plans are going to come together, I guess. And it is the commission's decision, in my opinion, as to how you will want to utilize the CAPS recommendations. Our staff will continue to utilize the comprehensive plan as the guiding document for its land use evaluations.
Any additional commissioner comments? Mr. Russell?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Second by Mr. McMahon. We are adjourned.